welcome to another episode of Playing With Research in Health and Physical Education. This next set of podcasts is going to be broken up into two parts. The first part, we have Dr. Lewis Harrison and Linson Clark on both of these, and we ended up having the longest podcast that I've recorded to date. So we talked for over an hour and 10 minutes or something. So I've kind of edited it down into two separate parts. One is more about, and this is going to be the first one, is more about information about Dr. Harrison's career, about the initiatives he's done at UT Austin, kind of advice to young scholars, brief understanding of what type of research he does. And then part two is going to be more along the lines of his more specific research about race and ethnicity. We talk later with Langston and Dr. Harrison about their perceptions of how to talk about race and teach education courses, and how race kind of permeates through these discussions in what's happening in K-12 and you know, schools, and what's happening in the classrooms as well. So hope you enjoy these. I had some sort of audio issue that I've spent 2 hours trying to fix, so it's not perfect, but the content is really, really awesome, and I really hope that you enjoy these two next podcasts. All right, so we are here with Dr. Lewis Harrison from the University of Texas at Austin and Dr. Langston Clark from the University of Texas at San Antonio. We've been lucky enough to have some great conversations lately with scholars in our field who've really been influential to the growth and legitimacy of our field. So we're continuing that trend in our second year with Dr. Harrison, and we're lucky to have one of his former students and a young scholar in our field, Dr. Langston Clark, on at the same time. So Langston will jump in with some pointed questions throughout the podcast as well. But Dr. Harrison, let's just start off with a really simple question that might take us down a rabbit hole, but how did you end up at UT Austin? Can you kind of explain your path to UT and, you know, maybe start from your undergrad and kind of follow along, and happy to take any tangents that you want to take.
Well, as an undergrad, I was born and raised in New Orleans, and I went to undergrad at the University of New Orleans. I got both my bachelor's and master's degree there. I got a job as an instructor at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. And from there, I started taking courses and got my PhD from LSU, and was hired there as an assistant professor, and worked there for quite a while, and about 12 to 13 years. And then I was recruited to the University of Texas to start a physical education program here.
So this is Langston Clark, everybody. It's a joy and a pleasure to be on the podcast. Just wanted to ask you, Dr. Harrison, this question. As a doc student, you know, we always get told that you don't get to stay planted where you are after you graduate. And so I think it's unique that you had that experience, an experience that a lot of us don't have, because we dream about like going back to where we got our PhDs. Just some insights on what that experience was like. What was the dynamic of you being able to stay at the school that you got your doctoral degree?
Yeah, I know it's rather unusual, but I think it was an unusual set of circumstances. I didn't want to leave because I had some family issues. My wife's family is from Baton Rouge. My family's from New Orleans. I didn't really want to leave the area. And at the time, LSU was looking for an assistant professor. Had interviewed several people for one reason or another. None of them took the job. And I was at the same time out looking for, I was interviewing for positions. And finally, I asked the chair, well, what about if I would apply for this position? And she told me to go ahead and do so because they were having trouble filling it. So I guess the rest is history. I wound up there at LSU after being a student there for so long.
So how long were you at LSU for? How many years?
I worked there as an instructor for a while. I graduated in 1997, and I started my assistant professorship right at that point. I had been working there since about 94, I believe. So I worked as an instructor for like 3 years, and then went on the tenure track as an assistant professor and got tenured there, and then was recruited here, Texas.
And so you went from LSU and to University of Texas, and those are the only two places that you've worked at as a professor, correct?
Correct. Yes.
So what would you say like the institutional differences, and not to categorize them in like these binaries of good or bad or anything like that, but what are the differences between, you know, you went, both are R1 places, and so what, can you kind of talk about why you decided to move and what kind of attracted you to UT?
Well, one of the things, the work that I was doing in terms of race and sport and physical activity and physical education, LSU was a little bit more conservative. And doing the work around there, well, let's say when I came to visit Texas and talk to some of the faculty members, and there are lots of people here doing work in the realm of race and ethnicity and culture, and people were very, very comfortable about talking about those kinds of things here. And it just seemed like a place where I could be comfortable in doing the kind of work that I do, more comfortable than I was, say, at LSU. So it was very attractive to be able to come here and work around colleagues, lots of other colleagues that did work. Even if they weren't engaged in physical education or sport, they were still dealing with issues of culture and race and ethnicity and gender and all of those things that we in this department seek to understand better.
So for me, as a follow-up, I'm just kind of wondering. So you came from a kinesiology department to a curriculum and instruction department. And I think me even being someone who kind of did the same thing, right? Because I was in the PhD program in CNI, and now I'm in kinesiology. What was the transition like from those two different like academic cultures, the culture of CNI and the culture of kinesiology? Because as peak scholars, we're like, I don't know, I think we're in the margins of both, right? But both are very different. It's a weird space to be in.
Yes, it is. It's very interesting. And kinesiology departments, oftentimes, a lot of the power is wielded by the people in the scientific areas, exercise physiologists, biomechanics, those kinds of individuals, where there is a lot of, there's a much more availability of grant funding and those kinds of things. So those individuals tend to hold the power. And then, but then in a curriculum and instruction department, it's the people in science education that tend to have a little bit more power. And again, the power usually goes with the money because of the available grant funding in those areas. So, but I think physical education, from my perspective, I think we're a little bit more comfortable in this educational space rather than in the biomechanic exercise physiology space of kinesiology. So that's just my, you know, my perception from the two places that I've been.
Yeah, we just had our summer research reading seminar for our master's students, and we went through that 1990s Quest set of articles by Locke and Seedentop and Newell about, you know, the fractioning of the field and chaos out of order, and Roberta Rickley's paper in 2006 about, you know, building a home for kinesiology. And I think it's such an interesting space to be in now because kinesiology is so big. It's attracting so many, you know, students, and PE ends up becoming not the most attractive place to, you know, study necessarily when you have all this biomechanics and all this cool high-tech equipment and working in sports. So can you talk about, I know you gave a presentation at ARA a few years back about how UT, you've kind of decided where to go and where physical education is housed and how you've kind of restructured your physical education program to be more attractive and kind of be more widespread so you can do a coaching emphasis or get a teacher licensure or get some other experience that way.
Yeah, we had a lot of different kinds of students coming to our, that were interested in our program. We had the traditional PEAT students who wanted to study physical education. But we also had some individuals that were coming in that wanted to look at, for example, people that were interested in my background wanted to look at the race and ethnicity aspect of physical education and of sport and how those two overlap. So we had some different kinds of students that came in, and we wanted to try to be more inclusive to be able to respond to their areas of interest.
So Risto, one of the things that like I noticed being a doc student under Dr. Harrison at UT was a welcoming of being mentored and learning from and doing research with scholars who are committed to the type of like cultural social justice work that we do but aren't in physical education. And so as a student coming up under Dr. Harrison, it was beneficial because I learned perspectives of education from scholars in social studies or scholars in curriculum studies or cultural studies, ideas that were fresh in PE that maybe weren't so fresh in other disciplines. But at the same time, we had an opportunity to educate scholars in other disciplines of teacher education on what it is and some of the issues that we have in PE beyond the experiences that they had at K-12 students. And that was one of the primary benefits, I think, from the perspective of a doc student of being in an environment like that.
So how did that influence the scholarship that you're doing now? Like, did you come in knowing exactly what you wanted to study at UT, and that's why you sought out Dr. Harrison? Or did you kind of come into UT and then kind of move towards that way, and has that influenced the work that you do now?
Dr. Harrison was suggested to me by Dr. Hodge at Ohio State, who was my advisor while I was getting my master's degree. And I benefited from a fellowship my first year in the doc program. And I think like most doctoral students, I had a whole bunch of different ideas of things that I wanted to study and were interested in. I don't even know if I remember all of them, to be honest with you. I don't think coming into UT that it gave me that that being under the scholars at UT Austin gave me what I wanted to study. I was interested in historically Black colleges and universities, and there's one across the highway from us. So I was already going over there to talk to students. What UT Austin gave me were the tools to understand how to do the type of research that I was doing, and not necessarily the topic. If that makes sense. It gave me a perspective of education and systems and structures that I wasn't privy to before. But a lot of that came from outside of the PE program, from scholars who have perspectives and insights that, you know, are, like I said, are fresh and new in our discipline.
And I think that's interesting because there are a lot of, you know, techniques and theories that, you know, you just look at in other fields of education. It's, and not always, but it seems like physical education's a little bit behind. And, you know, there are certain, like, if you were to sit down and read the latest research in a top tier educational journal and use those theories and practices in PE, you'd be really cutting edge, you know, just by just looking at what they're doing, repeating a similar study in physical education class instead of a science or math or English or social studies. So, and I like what you said, Langston, about, you know, going to UT gave you the tools, not necessarily the topic. And I think that's important to remember as PhD students is, yeah, look for an advisor who's going to help you and aligns with your, you know, topic of interest, but also you got to do something that you're passionate about. And, you know, that it might not be exactly following along the line of whoever your advisor is. But I like the way that you put that. So, Langston, have you, can you talk a little bit about your work in HBCUs and kind of talk a little bit? And I know we're going to have you on in a future podcast about a specific paper, but can you kind of give us an overview of what kind of work you're recently doing and how that kind of relates to these conversations?
So my work has been on the manifestation of social justice within PEET, physical education, teacher education, at historically Black colleges and universities. And essentially what I do is I take this concept that is popular in PEET, but popular across like education, teacher education, scholarship, and put it in a context that isn't predominantly white, which is what most of the bulk of the literature attends to. And so I wanted to explore something that was rooted in like my own sort of training as a PE teacher, but then also offer something new, a different perspective or vantage point of social justice to the PE literature, but then also the physical, the broader teacher education literature. Because as we stated before, if you take some concept that maybe isn't so new in teacher education or the broader education universe and apply it to PE, then it becomes novel. But there's some novelty with what we do that doesn't get recognized throughout the broad universe of teacher education scholarship. And so what I've tried to do is sort of bridge both of those gaps to kind of talk about social justice in a way that we don't talk about it in PEET, but then also talk about social justice in a way that isn't talked about within teacher education, within classroom teacher education preparation.
Yeah, and Langston, you brought this up at, I think it was the last ARA, about presenting our research in more wider education journals. Can you both give a couple journals that you've had positive experiences with that are not like PESP, JTPE, RQES, but are a little bit more wide that are receptive to physical education research?
I've published in with other students in an urban ed journal that's really an educational journal. And race, ethnicity, and education, and which again is another UK journal that kind of focuses on education broadly. So those are the two that come to mind for me.
So I have published in the Teacher Educator. I've published in the Journal of Negro Education. And I think those are the two most recent ones that aren't PE journals. But I also wanted to say this because I made this mistake as a young scholar. I had an opportunity. I got to revise and resubmit from the Journal of Teacher Education, which is like one of the top teacher education journals. And it's the language said reject and then resubmit later on, but I read that as a rejection. And so I think I carried, the way I interpreted the language was me carrying something I project onto these other journals. I think in some ways they're more receptive to our work than we realize. And the filter that I had up didn't allow me to see that they were actually giving me feedback and encouraging me to do a revise and resubmit. But my heart and my mind viewed it as an outright rejection, and that's not what it was. So I don't think we should assume that we can't get published in an AERA journal, or, you know, a journal of teacher education, or teacher's college record, or whatever the case may be, because we offer perspectives from PE that other people I think are open to listening to and reading.
Yeah, and I think that today's reject and resubmit is really a revise and resubmit, and and I have no data to back this up, but I have this strong inkling that a lot of it is increasing the rejection rate, so their impact factor is stronger, so they'll say it's a reject, but hey, we've opened the door, it's basically major revisions, just revise it, and then the next round when you send it in, we'll stay at our 50%, 40% rejection rate. And I've had that too, and it definitely stings. So speaking of that kind of experience, Dr. Harrison, can you do you have any advice that you'd give to young scholars in the field of physical education regarding, you know, anything, the publication process, the tenure process, any kind of words of wisdom as you've gone through it?
Well, Langston's probably heard this a lot, but I always tell my students to grow some thick skin. Don't take the feedback from your papers personally. Take it as an opportunity to you know, I mean, you know, when someone is saying something about your paper that maybe they don't quite understand, but also be open enough to see that, well, maybe, you know, the perspective that you bring to this is maybe a little bit different. Be ready to be open enough to not allow these things to, as Langston did, or hurt your feelings because it said reject. And even if you get an outright reject, that doesn't mean your paper's not any good. That simply means you got to go someplace else with it. That's all.
Do you have a system that you do for continuing to stay productive in getting out papers? Do you have, like, I always have this many projects in press, in review, or this many collaborators, or any formula or anything like that that you try to stick to?
You know, I kind of envy people who do that. I don't. I kind of let things come the way they come and flow with, you know, whatever I'm working with. Sometimes I get too many ideas, some things that I can't follow up myself. And I'm blessed to have some really good graduate students around that I can say, hey, look, I was thinking about this. What do you think about this? You're interested in this? And they can take the idea and run with it, because I don't have time to actually, you know, develop the project. So I'm just happy to get the work out. And many times I'm just working and publishing with my graduate students more so than coming up with things myself, because I have so many other things that pull me in so many different directions. It's hard sometimes to stay focused on a particular research trajectory.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about your PhD students? Do you know how many you've had over the years? And kind of your mentality about mentorship?
I try to take kind of an open perspective on mentorship. I try to listen to and watch and pay attention to my students to kind of flow with them. Students are all different. There are some students that you can kind of get close to, other students are more standoffish. You know, it just runs the gamut. But I try to get as close as I can to my students because I believe that I have to get close enough to them to get them to trust me before they'll take criticism from me. And sometimes my criticism is a little bit harsh. And people won't take that from people that they don't trust or they think that don't really care about them. So if you show people that you care about them, then you can bring the criticism on. And the criticism is necessary, especially as you go further along in the doctoral program. Because, you know, sometimes you got to say, no, that's not good enough. No, you didn't do a good job with this. And you know, again, trying to teach them to grow that thick skin, to not take criticism personally, but to use it to make what they do better. So again, just trying to learn the graduate students, you know, the ins and out, what, you know, what motivates them, what makes them stand off. There are some graduate students that, you know, I have to kind of keep a distance from because they're that kind of person. And then others I can get really close to. So it just depends. I really just try to take them, look at them and work with them as individuals to try to see what's the best way to motivate them to be the best person that they can be. And I have a stake in this because I really love this research and I want it to continue to go on. So I'm hoping these individuals will, you know, continue on doing this kind of work.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate both of you coming on today. And next week, we are moving on to our second part of this podcast, where we really dig a little deeper into Dr. Harrison, your work about race, ethnicity in sports and physical education. So I really appreciate the time. We're going to link to both of your faculty profiles at the bottom of the notes section for those of you who are interested in finding more about the research that two of these great scholars are doing.